listeners, and welcome to a very special edition of the Rawcast. We have with us today Mr. David Perret, the general manager of the football club. So it's great to have had him on board.
Absolutely, and it's just really exciting that he's he got in touch and offered his time and generously so, and let's you want to hop straight into it?
Absolutely, let's get into it. Thanks again for joining us, Dave.
Hey guys, it's good to be back.
Excellent. Now let's get into some more general things about. So obviously, there's been a lot of talk about the football department over the last, the last 2 months since John Aloisi decided to step aside. What's some of the things that we can talk about here? I mean, do you want to start with probably like what's the coaching situation? Like, where's that process gone? Obviously, we've heard about where the board is. Like, how is that ticking along? What is there any update you can provide on that?
Sure, I certainly haven't made any public comments on any updates, but I'm happy to give you a little bit of an insight. We've obviously had an abundance of people apply for the role, well over about 160 people. That process has been dwindled down quite somewhat based upon a lot of criteria that we expect and we want from a coach to lead our club forward. We've then gone through some interviews and they've been conducted. They're progressing, and then there'll be further analysis on moving forward into second interviews. As well, and that's more around interviewing back to the panel. So that's where we're at the moment. We won't be far away from making a formed decision on that. But I think this is probably the first time the club's taken such an approach to understand what exactly we are after, what we're needing, to then take that next coach into the future with the club.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it seems like it has taken a long time, because it's by the time this is out, it would be over 2 months since John Aloisi left. Has that taken too long in your mind, or you've been happy with how this process has gone along?
No, the club's been very happy with the way the process has gone along. You can rush into these things as well, and you've got to try and make the best informed decisions possible. And that, that entails a thorough process about investigation of individuals. If I went into the criteria, it's so lengthy. There's about 10 different pieces of criteria you have to meet first and foremost, then make it into the next sort of round. And we do that, so we've been quite diligent how we do it, and I think that's the best way a process should go. It's no good just randomly selecting someone because they've got a great name, or looking at someone for their past. You have to really get involved with them and understand them, because character is a big part of this club, and loyalty is going to be a big part of this club as well. So we take our time on it. I think it's going quite well, and I think we're coming to a final result not far away.
Dave, not the head coaching situation per se, but what was we had Pedro Dinovic at the club for the balance of the season until recently, and he recently left to take up a position with Melbourne City, as most of our listeners will be aware, and obviously our club legend Shane Stefanuto taking over from him. What was the situation there? And what was the lead into that? Because I think we'll all agree, player to media manager to football director is a bit of an unusual career path.
Yeah, there's probably a couple of other steps that the general public don't see. So let's talk about Shane for the moment, because Shane obviously left a very successful career. He still played for Olympic, which is great, obviously, to keep the juices flowing. But he's given an opportunity, which I think is wonderful within our sport, to try and keep really good people who live and breathe the culture of what success is in the club, to give them an opportunity outside of what they would be normally used to. You think these players, they're used to being told what to do, what to eat, what to sleep, a whole lot of things. So to bring him more into the world of this is what real life is as well, has been tremendous to see him grow. The step, which I think the public haven't seen in between the last 14 months, is Shane took on more of a broader role in the club. Not only the media piece, but getting his hands dirty around the operational side of it. So working very close with myself from an administrative point of view, and we all know he's got a football brain as well. So when you look at it from a sense of developing people, which we're all about, when Pedge told us that he had an opportunity, but that was only part of the reason as well he left. He's a Victorian-born boy. He's got family down there. He's been away from there a long time. When we looked at Shane around taking this next step, it was a natural course of events where we've gone, well, he's been educated, he's been trained, he understands the culture of the club that we require to be successful. He has a great rapport with the players. He understands the contractual requirements around it. He understands the idiosyncrasies of the salary cap. He has a great rapport amongst all the staff. And it's another challenge for him as well. So it was a natural progression that way. And a lot of people don't see that from behind the scenes, and that's part of what happens within any organisation. But I think he was taking it on with gusto, and I know he'll give it an absolute crack to make it a success for him and for the club as well.
Yeah, and you know, it is obviously a great thing to be, you know, able to promote from within like that.
Yep.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and we, you know, we've seen, when you see those established long-term clubs, they have these people that understand the culture, and that's how you want to go to if you want to look at Manchester United, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has come back in, and he's just turned that culture around because he understands what the club is, and that's important. I think I do like the way you've brought in those people, and like Jade North and the coaching. So, do like what you've done there.
I think, look, and it's an extension of that. I think the way we'll keep going as a club is to look at that era of player. If they're still in Queensland, they still want an opportunity, and there's an opportunity that's available, be it in the academy system, be it if it was in a coaching or even general parts of the club, how we still get them involved. We've got a long way to go with that. And I think the A-League itself, with their players in the past as well, have a long way to go. But look, it's a step-by-step process. But it's not just isolated to the men either. When there's roles and jobs going with inside, we always look at our women's team. And thankfully, they're even greater and successful where they can get overseas opportunities. But if there's an opportunity internally that they can do a brief stint within an administrative function, we try and accommodate that as best we can. Okay. So we're quite open to how we look at the individuals and give them opportunity within the club.
Now, one of the other main people that's just left very recently, it was only announced 2 weeks ago, was Drew Sherman leaving just before the game with Central Coast. Now, obviously, he's been instrumental in setting up the academy and gotten good results this year with, obviously, the Y League team winning, and had been the 2IC as such with Darren recently since Ross has left.
Yeah, so look, Drew, yeah, absolutely. Credit to Drew around helping set up the academy. There's a lot of brains around that, and he's been a driver of the execution of it as well. And there's people in the past that have been a big help in that. And there's obviously people that are currently there. I mean, the academy coaches themselves deserve a hell of a lot of credit. From our under-14s, 13s, all the way to 20s, our NPL team, which is going quite well, it's, you know, not a desire for us to go and win the NPL. I think that might just be an outcome that may happen. But it's not about winning a trophy in the NPL system. It's about playing kids up, giving them the experience, and obviously the results are the results. But that's about producing homegrown quality players for the A-League, and if they're good enough, they'll get a gig. If they're exceptional in a certain way, they might be looked at from overseas. And if they don't get to make that position, and this is what I think Drew's done very well, then it's only going to strengthen those leagues around Queensland at the NPL level interstate. And I think that's a wonderful model. And we're starting to see a little bit of early the bearing of fruits with obviously the NYL boys. And there's some other coaches that have supported Drew in that as well, and they need a lot of credit. But Drew's done a good job, and there's an opportunity for him and his family in Victoria, which I think is a good move for him as well. But it also shows you the depth with our academy, because we had redundancies in place in the event that anyone left from the structure we've put in place. So there's really no impact to the change of what's happening in the academy at all. It's sad to see good people go, but that's part of what happens in football. People move, people take an opportunity, especially if we don't have one present at the club. So it's a different function down at Melbourne Victory for him, and I know it's going to be a big challenge for him, but you know, if he focuses, he'll do quite well. But it gives another opportunity internally as a club. Darren, obviously taking on the interim coach role, I think has done a tremendous job. You know, he's got a couple of wins, a few draws, but importantly, the boys have really gelled as well with him. And the support and trust he's had with Drew, but also other coaches that you don't see on the benches who have helped him through the training process and also game day process That'll be a next step for another opportunity for someone within the club who's helping him now from an interim perspective too.
Well, it's certainly a well-worn path, is that, from the Brisbane Roar Football Club to either Melbourne City or Melbourne Victory, and apparently off-field, on-field, just about any part of the football club.
Well, greatness breeds from Queensland, so let's just leave it at that.
Well, hey, you know, how many titles would they have won without, doing what they did to us?
Big
fat...
And that's a testament. I mean, look, the realities are they are what they are in Victory. They're a great club. But we are a greater club, and I look at it from the perspective of not just the A-League team. I look at the women's. I look at a wonderful coach who I think should be, depending on what happens after the World Cup, probably the next Matildas coach, being Mel Andrietta. We've got a wonderful crop of women, with great diversity to represent not only our club but Australia well when they're playing internationally as well. Our youth boys, our coaches, our structures now within the medical departments, our high performance structures in place. And we put those in place, if you can recall, last year when we did a full review of some of the issues we had within the strength and conditioning. And the results, albeit from a sense of the injury soft tissue, which are very minimal in the club, it's a devastating aspect around the A-League team to see some of those harder injuries like broken legs and feet and ACLs. And that's a testament to putting a structure in place. So if someone did leave, the club's still going to be functioning at an optimal level it can be. So that's the type of stuff we have put in place to ensure we've got a consistency of and looking after our players' welfare all the time, regardless who comes in and out. So that was part of our key objective, and I believe we achieved that.
Fantastic. Touched on the W League in your answer there, Dave. Obviously, we know your thoughts on Mel. Just generally, how happy were you with the W League season? Certainly as well, because the semi final was out there, we took a couple of games out there. How happy are you as well with Redcliffe as a potential future, venue partner for W League and for other things?
Look, I think it starts with one common denominator, and it's the fan base. So looking at the Raw core and spending a bit of time with them behind the scenes, they are a standout shining light, and I'm not just saying this as a rhetoric. This is factual around what active support should be within the women's game. And they are certainly leading the way. They had a significant influence in having that game as a standalone game, that semi-final at Redcliffe on the Sunday evening. Others may have doubted it.
I think the crowd spoke for it.
100%. And I think that is a testament to them. They're loud and proud, and the women love it. The women have been a constant shining light in the club. They obviously play a shortened season. By making some moves this year to be closer with a total club approach from training at Logan to having their own change rooms. The double headers at Suncorp Stadium, there's a bit of question marks, and we have to investigate a bit more if it's actually beneficial for them or they deserve the right to have standalone games. Obviously, that's the difference between what broadcasters want, what our players want, because they love to play in big stadiums, but also our fan base want as well. So there's a difference of opinion across all three. But Redcliffe, I think, has shown that it's very accessible to Brisbane. It's accessible on the North Coast. There's a lot of untapped fans out there. We've had games, a Thursday night game for the women's, which got, I think it was 3,000-odd people, which is still the highest W League during in-season crowd on a Thursday night yet. And then we had a tremendous semi-final, which we had over 4,000 people attend on a Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. So that shows you a massive corridor of growth. The club has already investigated where a lot of our ticket purchases come from and our members reside, which do tend to come from that part of town as well. We have a good cross-section all over, but there's a real big propensity out there as well, plus a fantastic relationship with Peninsula Power, who, if you look at the back end of it, why we do things like this, we believe in a football economy. And I'm sorry to just belt on, but I think this is really important.
Of course.
The local clubs, when we're working with them, say with Dolphin and Peninsula Power, we give Dolphin an opportunity, sorry, we give Peninsula Power an opportunity to make some money through selling raffle tickets, and we give them our collateral to sell, and they raise money for their club, because a few thousand dollars for them is tremendous. And we do that not only there, but other areas, such as when we took the women's game to our obviously birthplace, being Richlands Lions, and the feedback from being at Lions has been tremendous. It's a great atmosphere, and again, Lions FC make some money by doing the canteens, doing a whole lot of things to raise money for their club, which goes back into the local kids and grassroots. So that's how we think, and that's what we continue to do. We don't go out publicly and announce it, but I think that's one of the testament of success that we had. Playing between those two venues, I think, has been optimal. And it gives rise to what does it look like with the A-League next year. We're still working through that from a perspective of what's going to be the best fan engagement, what's the calendar looking like for Suncorp, what's the optimal type of attendance at Suncorp we can get, what's other venues across Queensland we could look at. I don't think Gold Coast, to eliminate that, is probably going to be one of those venues. So you don't have to ask me that question, Clark, at all.
I love the hour and a half train trip to the middle of nowhere at Robina to walk through that gravel car park. It's just so inviting.
People learn lessons. We all learn lessons from the past and we move forward. But I think that there's some really good case studies now around, one, driving an agenda, which we have been probably very professionally and not publicly around governments. We have put some requests in for governments, and we've lobbied governments. We're doing more so with the State Federation, because it's about, and quite honestly for your listeners, it's about looking at more appropriate infrastructure for women's sport. Our club has never received much from the government at all in regards to infrastructure. But I think if we're looking at the next 12 months to 2 years, what I would expect from a government contributing, since they've contributed to AFL, since they contributed to other women's sports, is give to the sport that is the biggest participation and the greatest amount of growth, especially within young ladies, young girls, and into women's, and that is football. And then it gets into where can they be based so they can have the optimal training program, the optimal training venue, and I believe they need to invest in some infrastructure at Logan solely for their requirements. And that's not just talking about change rooms either. We're talking about a couple of artificial pitches that they can train all year round on, but also how we combine that with local football clubs such as Football Queensland, Brisbane, so we can start continually growing people and developing the pathways so they can then be the next great W League player or potentially A League player as well.
And Matildas as well.
And Matildas, 100%.
Absolutely. Pricey.
Well, moving on, I think we touched on the stadium. So, you know, obviously looking at those options, because I think we're back to due to have the 14th. Well, we don't know what the draw will look like for next season. Maybe you have any insight, but you probably cannot allow to share them yet. Looking around those different stadium options, I think it's always interesting where we can go with that. So, you know, because we know that, I think what sort of are we looking at for these five home games coming up? Obviously, another two games against the two Sydney teams, I think both on Friday nights. We have a maroon jersey that I notice hasn't been rolled out yet, Dave.
Not yet, correct.
Not yet. I assume we're going to roll that out against Central Coast Mariners. No, we've already played them. Wellington Phoenix, maybe? Should I keep guessing?
Well, look, I think a couple of things. Let's take it one at a time. So we have five home games left. What we've actually endeavoured to do this time around is to allocate a particular game to a football zone, and also the Church League as well. So the next one is the Gold Coast football zone. Gold Coast has dedicated where their kids and participants can go free with a paying adult, and part of that is to celebrate their club by doing a march past. And a lot of kids get on the field. Mum, dad, grandpa, grandma can take photos of little Johnny or Jane before the A-League game. And that's a big buzz, and it's a highlight for them, not only them, but also can be memorable for the rest of their lives. Also, then we're looking at the other games proceeding into what I think should be a huge game, an Anzac Day. It's difficult when things haven't gone well on the pitch to garner a crowd, but, you know, the loyalty we get from a lot of our fans, we started off with a bang with the big, big crowds, and obviously it's died off there since, but there's a lot of people working hard behind the scenes to grow that and initiatives to to drive a crowd there. But Anzac Day, the penultimate around, celebrating Anzac for the right reasons. And we're working even with government to understand what, you know, advantages they can give the club and also those armed services people as well, past and present, to get them to enjoy the only game that's going to be in Queensland on that day, kicking off at 2 o'clock. And if we can get a big crowd for that, and that's what we're certainly planning for and driving towards, then I think it'll take, you know, that event in Queensland further for years to come. I think we've got a natural rivalry now with Adelaide United.
Yeah, that's one way to put it.
You know, you could call it, there's some stuff we're working with Adelaide around Remembrance Round down there and how we continued on for Anzac Day up here. So we are working collectively as clubs to do that. In relation to rounds next year, we've been informed that, I can say not through feedback, but we've been informed there's going to be 13 home games or 13 games per club at home, with the additional team and how the bye works in with that. We'll be looking at the competitions calendar. We get informed that as clubs, and then we have to work out the best way, start dates, end dates, FIFA breaks, if they do, they don't. There's so many different machinations in this to work through. But, you know, even for our club, we don't, you know, playing midweeks is a disaster. It's very difficult. I know it ticks a box on broadcast, which is great, but, you know, we're about balancing it all with our fans and members and broadcast and attendance. So I think we're going to be very careful there on what dates we select, and we've done a lot of analysis on that as well. I think there, you've just seen Wellington sell games to Eastern Coast clubs.
Yeah, that didn't go down well.
Well, it didn't go down well for Wellington. I'm sure Sydney won't be thinking that.
Yeah.
But I can tell you quite honestly that if a club, and it's certainly been open, if a club wishes to play their home game in Queensland, then it's a commercial outcome for them that they're happy with, then we will take that. Why wouldn't we?
Yeah.
We would take that advantage. It's been offered and asked and been considered. So it's not like we haven't gone down that path. If you're saying, have we ever thought about selling a game into New South Wales, Victoria, categorically no. Absolutely not.
And certainly not with, you know, a reduced amount of games. You know, you'd expect that, that would not happen. Oh, so.
Is Queensland such a big market as well that, yeah, you've got your own options with inside Queensland that you'd certainly be looking at first?
Yeah, look, I mean, we're planning on, we want to finish the A-League season on a high. I mean, that's one thing. They have to get, the boys need to continue to focus and go out and give everything they've got. That's what our fans demand of them. They want them to be fearless. They want them to have a crack, win, lose or draw. That's the culture I know has been driven and the outcome that's hopefully been expected. But we have to obviously keep planning forward into pre-season. The break, depending on when we finish, they'll have 4 weeks off, the boys, back in, let's say, 1st of June. I know we'll go on a camp this year in conjunction with Football Queensland to Cairns. Okay. As part of the Community Cup. So a very similar format. What we did in, I think it was Mackay last year.
Yeah, Mackay, yeah. You went up to the Magpie Crusaders United. Many other words in their name. Football club.
So we'll do that. And then it's, you know, where we play pre-season games to get as much game time in as possible. And the clubs we play, and obviously a lot of the A-League clubs do come and visit to Queensland quite often. They like to have closed door games, and they, as Wellington, certainly know that now. They wanted that, they got that, and we're happy to oblige with that as well. But I think, you know, with different venues, the whole surface is really good. My preference is love playing on at clubland, like local grassroots clubs, and it's the same methodology. It's about giving that grassroots clubs the opportunity to make some money in their canteens, which helps them survive through the year. For us, it's about playing on a quality surface, getting game time in and being close to the fans. And it's as simple as that. Simple as that.
Changing tack a bit, Dave. We had a bit of media speculation recently, as we touched on the show a couple of weeks ago, around the Adam Taggart transfer. Now, I understand that, you know, in the media there's, you know, there's confidentiality agreements, et cetera, but what can you tell us about how that went down and also about how that was reported?
Yeah, look, it was reported incorrectly to start with. I mean, it's like any contract. There's confidential aspects of it for the respect for the player, respect for the club, and respect for the club that player is going to. The dollar figure isn't correct, and I know I can tell you that categorically. I can't tell you the exact amount. But the transfer agreement has many stipulating clauses. The club's happy with the outcome of what we received and what we may receive in the future as well. We're respectful for the club that signed Adam. We didn't name the club as such because we obliged by our transfer agreements by not doing that. Adam's happy as well. He gets an opportunity to grow his football, and that's great. So it's a win-win from our perspective. We can't get in, to argy-bargy with commentators and their views or facts or the wrong facts. We just have to deal with what we deal with. And out of it also looked at the positives. Adam gets an opportunity, the club gets an opportunity, and the club gets a further opportunity to develop even youth and to reward them with contracts. And as you all know, we signed Dylan Wenzel-Halls, a fantastic young 21-year-old, started at the Raw, went back into NPL, worked his backside off, came back in under John, continued to develop, then started getting some game time, and he's done everything he can to warrant a couple of year contract, which is great. And the hope for that young boy is, or young man, I should say, is he continues to grow and develop like we've seen with many young players in the club in the past, such as a Borrello, et cetera, just comes to mind, that they can then grow and either aspire to be greater A-League players for our club or, reach a goal if it's to move into Europe or move into Asia. That's certainly on the cards, and we're pretty proud of that.
Yeah, and only involved in a cheeky 4 goals over the weekend,
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think either, if not scoring, I think assist or an assist and assist for him. So he was certainly involved on the weekend, and he's already, I think, repaid you pretty, already started to repay the faith pretty well. So hopefully he kicks on.
Yes, yeah, another 10 or so goals before the end of the year would be handy as well.
Well, never know.
Are you revealing his contract bonuses there, Dave?
No. Maybe they don't have to pay tags, a golden boot arm.
That'd be nice.
I think, back on Adam. Adam's, he came to the club. He did work hard. The proud thing for the club is we put a structure around him where he could play each game. He probably wouldn't have got that in other clubs in the A-League, and that's then given the opportunity where he can go overseas, because it probably would be questionable if he was in the other clubs that he's been part of, that the game time he was getting and the continuity of that game time would have been questionable and might not have arisen that opportunity overseas. So, our club's done well. The return that we've got from Adam has been great, both fiscally and also on the pitch. It's created an opportunity for him, and everyone's happy, and we move forward.
Excellent. So obviously one of the main ways that the club can make money is transfers, and that's why it's good to have, the program set up. Obviously the Backroos have put in a lot of money that has different amounts been reported. Yet some people still have the thought process that they're very tight with their money and they don't put in enough. Do you find that to be true? Can the club actually become self-sufficient? Obviously that's a big thing. I don't think many football clubs in the world make money, apart from probably Manchester United, but we can't all be owned by UAE billionaires, unfortunately. So how does this club move forward in that sort of area?
Yeah, with the Backroos? It's a very good question. I think there's a lot of balls up in the air on that. Yes, the owner has put a considerable amount. Probably it would shock a lot of people the amount of money that he's put in. I can tell you that no money has ever come out back to the owner at all. That's one thing for certain when I look at the audited financials. Two, the environment we're all facing now within the A-League and the W-League as well, because it's all part of one and the same around the new league's working group and ensuring how independence is looked at. And those discussions need to be feverish, and they need to understand how football needs to be in this country and from a professional game, and to look at it from a sense of how the revenues flow to be a more sustainable model. You can't have clubs investing tens of millions of dollars, and I'm just saying that plural, across the league over many years, burning a deep hole in their pockets. They've got to see an outcome. And that outcome is either generating more revenue, which is then improving the value of the league, improving the worth of the clubs. And when the clubs are more worth, then they start investing in such things as academies. From our club's point of view, we've poured a lot into an academy, especially under the, if I take that as an isolated perspective, not having a pay-to-play academy is the first in Australia. Western Sydney then followed. Others haven't. But that we have a long-term vision of the academy. And I've just mentioned that before around producing players. And that would have a fiscal outcome if you transferred them overseas, or it has a beneficial outcome for the A-League as well, which then develops potentially into overseas or making our club even stronger from developing within the youth. The other way our club is, and from a past perspective, is building our commercial elements and what we do with our sponsors, and that's continually growing. The broadcast has been brilliant. I think it's questionable around viewership numbers and how that's portrayed. I think there's a lot of transitioning into digital platforms. That content is viewed and it needs to be measured appropriately and properly, because I think that is the future. And then it's about how we grow the game together. And I think we need to do a lot more of that to make it even financially viable. Because if it's a business and it's treated like a business of football, that there comes a point in time where people don't want to continue investing millions of dollars each year. It needs to show some form of return. And if that can be seen to show a good, strong form of return, then investments and businesses will grow. If it doesn't, then something's fundamentally not going to work properly.
And I think, you know, and I think you're absolutely right about the digital watching of games. I mean, the My Football app has been fantastic. You know, sometimes when, you know, my fellow friend here is not watching the game, he's sitting at the pub watching it on the My Football app. And, you know, and I know, you know, my other friendship group, a couple of us had Foxtel connections, you know, the old physical box, and we've all transitioned to KO, and probably a couple more have jumped on board as well, instead of maybe trying to find the dodgy illegal stream. So, yeah, and whether those numbers, I mean, it's reported that Fox Sports knows those, maybe knows those numbers on viewership. Well, they should for digital streaming. Yeah, whether, but that obviously doesn't get reflected in the pure number put up on a tweet
because
online.
Because there's lots of cord cutters, and, you know, that number is not, you know, the number of course looks bad compared to a time when nobody was watching digitally. Everyone had to have Foxtel.
Yeah.
And, you know, you compare it to, you know, a 2011 game, of course it's going to be less viewers.
Yeah, I think look on that as well. I mean, Fox now bringing KO in as well. I can say that at the moment we're not getting measurement numbers on that. But what I can say is it's interesting looking at a viewership point of view, and I don't want to get into the minutiae too much, but, you know, how often in the age demographic they look at football, they might jump from one station to watch football for 5-10 minutes, then to other things. There's big question marks around measurements as well. But delivery is very important for the end user, and I think KO looks pretty good. The My Football app through Telstra as well, if you're a Telstra customer, I think looks fantastic as well. I know I do that when I'm out and about and I need to watch some content. That is going to be the way of the future. It's then how you commercialise that in the best appropriate way, and to build it into a volume-based aspect. If you're a broadcaster, how do you capture those with these big black boxes in your homes to looking at something on a tablet, a phone, or even on, you know, Chromecasting on TV. I think it has to be the future, but it's making a commercially outcome for everyone to ensure that that continues.
Absolutely. And just kind of on, you know, on a related topic there, actually, no. I'm going to change the subject completely, actually. Just back on to talking about round about Adam Taggart, you know, the kind of transfer market in general. You know, with the news, you know, from last week that, you know, Bruno Fornaroli's, you know, inching towards Perth, and, you know, there's players starting to be snapped up for next season, you know, also just touching on the first thing we talked about, is not having a coach in place kind of, you know, is it going to hamper us signing, you know, players on pre-contracts, signing players for next season, you know, because obviously players are already starting to be signed?
Yes and no. I mean, the beauty is it's a long off-season as well. We've got players already contracted into next year. A lot of them are quite youthful as well. Youngie, the goalkeeper, probably the greatest goalkeeper in the A-League's history, as he always says to me, signed on. Digressing for that, and I will come back to it. Talk about one of the greatest individuals I've met, and actually defending him in front of the FSA Disciplinary and Ethics Committee last week. He is an outstanding individual, significantly intelligent, and did not deserve the punishment that he got. So that's Youngie, and we love him, and we'll continue to support him. Back on to the question at hand. Yes and no. Yeah, having a coach, yes, it will attract certain players as well. But I think the time of the pre-season and signing, you know, we have to look very carefully about the type of squad we want to have. And that just comes down to when we're recruiting coach, what we actually want to be playing like. And the Raw has been synonymous in the past with having very attacking, free-flowing, possession-based football that fans really want to enjoy. And that's what we're getting back to. I think we're getting a little bit that way this year with some of our plays in Spats, what we used to be like. But it has to evolve from that as well. So we have to find the coach first to do that. And then the players will certainly look at that coach and our opportunities within the broader market, both internationally and domestically. Because you've got to look, there are a lot of players that come off contracts in other clubs. And it's not so much about recycling those plays, but it's looking at the gems within the NPL as well. And I think there are a couple of diamonds in the rough there as well. And then it's about choosing the right ones. The beauty of having a new head coach is they can see it through clean eyes. They have their contacts. They have their scouts working for them as well. My job is to enforce the budget, which we give, which is quite substantial. And then we let them have free rein, because the ultimate outcome for them is to have the best squad available to them, to train them, educate them, and grow them as best they can for the success our club deserves. It's as simple as that.
So no Marcus Babbel sort of situation at Wanderers where we sign a squad and then sign a coach?
You could be like Western Melbourne and sign all these underroom staff and then sign the head coach.
Yeah, it's probably a great formula. Our club, and I think it's what you've seen, is we're certainly focused on the youth, how we secure the youth within scholarship programs that are within our academy system, NPL and YL structures. Dylan is obviously one of those youth that we've extended a contract on because of his performance and what the future we see him as well. And we've done that based upon obviously the incumbent being Darren there, his views and what the club's seen as well of Dylan. But as for other players and coming in, we constantly look. We've got time, which is great. And we'll make those judgments in due course as well. We've got games we've got to focus on and winning. And if the boys do that, if they warrant another contract, then by all means, it'd be done based upon a coach's approval, be it an interim or a newly announced one. But it's not going to be an isolated, the club wants you to stay and that's it. So I think that's fairness of the process, fairness of the coach, and we go from there. Sorry about the noise in the background as well.
It's all good. Have you heard our podcast before, Dave? it's not an issue.
You can tell it's bedtime for the kids.
So yeah, absolutely. All right, well, we'll just get on to the probably last couple and let you go, and you can get them off to bed. We didn't really seem to sign. We had a couple of long-term injuries, you know, unfortunately, this season. We didn't really seem to sign many injury replacement players. Was there a thought process behind that? Like, you already had the squad there, or...?
Yeah, look, I'll talk about one of the main ones being Bretto Holman.
Yeah.
Probably one of the most unluckiest men you've met in football. I won't go into the injury itself. However, we got significant medical advice at the start of the year about that and the re-signing and what would happen in the program. And the club was very comfortable to sign Brett, and that there was complications within that. Surgery and how that's then manifested to where we are. I don't think the club expected that, and I damn well didn't know, Brett didn't expect that nor wanted that either. However, our duty is to look after the player, and that's what we've done. we were told different things throughout the period around the recovery, and then when things get set back, you certainly miss time. So that's probably one that's there. We did sign a couple of young players, Rowan and Charlie, as well through the window, as coming in, giving them an opportunity. As reported by someone, and I don't know how it came out or what it came out, but that's kudos to them that obviously we had a trialist start today as well. So that's, I won't mention the name because that's for others to find out. We'll do that. There are trialists.
We know that name, Dave. Come on. No, this is coming out a week after this is recorded. Yeah, yeah. So
you probably put him on a 5-year deal by the time this comes out.
Fortunate. so then that's one we're looking at, obviously, you know, when you've had injuries such as Connor O'Toole breaking his leg, Jack doing an ACL, poor Dane Ingham at the moment, we're still looking at what's happening there with Dane. These are structural injuries, they're not soft tissue injuries. You know, Avram significantly injured, you know, he wanted to recover overseas, so the first priority is to look after the player. Regardless if he signed for somewhere else, we know what the injuries that he had and he was carrying, and they're not minor as well. Is there more plays? There is. I think there's a lot of rules around signing plays in the window. If you go foreign during that window, you want to get it right. At that time, you know, we were looking, Taggart was a last minute decision about selling him. Do we bring in a replacement? Well, we've got some depth within the youth, we can play them. Defensively, where we at? Yes, we've got defenders as well. We can try and strengthen that as best we can. But there's, once that window's shut, then there's only certain players you can sign. Out of contracted players or players from the NPL. And finding those are very difficult. And then especially for the end of the season, that's fast approaching. So there's a lot of things that go on within making a decision. The club's made its choices. I think we've got another guy who's going to be coming in. I won't tell you who it is, to look at from a left-back point of view, obviously with Connor being injured significantly and Dane potentially, how we fill that void.
So Isaac Powell, 6-year contract, is that what we're talking?
Yeah. Young Isaac, I mean, what a revelation really for a young bloke who is gracing Suncorp Stadium. I think Kevin Muscat, even though you probably don't want to give any credit to Kevin Muscat, what did he say? He said, he's good enough to play, he's old enough to play.
That's right.
I think he coined that phrase, so credit to him. And it's right, it rings true. So young Isaac on the left, but we need obviously some cover as well down the back, and we're looking at that right now, and obviously within the coming days we might see just another trialist come through to support that. To get us through the end of the season. And as I said, by then we'll definitely have a coach announced. Well before then, that's the plan. And then we'll progress through planning out through the next season with them or with him. And we move forward.
Fantastic. Well, just one last question.
Just one last one, you reckon? Just
one last question, I think. So, what about that $18 million offer to buy the club, Dave? What about that $18 million?
The mystery Russians, Dave? The mystery Russians?
I thought it was Clarky sending it in. That's all. $18 million.
Was it that good? Was it that professional?
Well, yeah. So firstly, I've never seen or put my hands on or received an offer to buy the club. Nor have I been asked to pass on a bid or an offer. The vice chairman has made public comment about that as well around the club, and that's the facts. I haven't seen anything. What happens with the owner, if he's been directly contacted, is beyond my knowledge. But if the vice chairman and the chairman are saying there's been no offers, then there hasn't. I think you're also going to look at it from a very practical point of view. If you're looking at investing significant amounts of money to buy an asset in the club and a business, those who are serious about it do so discreetly. Those who have the money and the wealth do so discreetly. This is not a bidding process for either diminishing the club's value, especially when you're looking at new licenses being sold in the A-League for substantial amounts of money across Melbourne and now Sydney. So that's one thing. When there's a legitimate offer, if they're real people, really invested, and they appreciate and respect the confidentiality of what an offer and a process is, you would never hear about it until it's actually done. And I think that's testament to other clubs that have either sold part of their club off or purchased their club. It hasn't been done in the public domain. And that seems to be normal business practice across not only Australia but the world as well.
Yeah. Look, my offer was confidential until I brought it up.
Back of a coaster, was it? I can't remember.
It's a napkin. Napkin.
You were going to get $1 million pay rise though, mate, so you were laughing.
Don't tell people that one.
All right, I think that will about do us. We've spent enough time. I've had you for long enough tonight. Thank you very much for coming on, Dave. We do really appreciate it, and we hope, obviously, that the fans have gotten something out of it. And if there was anything else you wanted to say, then now's your chance.
Now's the time. Well, I'd say this. We live in a world that is constantly full of media and news. We obviously have a dedicated publication in Queensland who has a reporter. That's only one mechanism of distribution of media on their own sort of, how can I say this in an appropriate way, agenda. What the club loves to see is podcasts such as this, and there's a few others who, when you look at the truest essence of what they're all about, it's about the Brisbane Roar. And good, bad, or indifferent, criticised or praised, it doesn't matter, but the commonality is it's the Brisbane Roar. There's not other genders at foot. So I think as an opportunity to grow podcasts such as this, the Roarcast, being available even from myself and others and how we can grow these platforms organically through our content as driven by the club, but also by supporting you guys and others as well, really starts getting people more interested in listening to what we're doing for the right reasons and what's going on in the club, good, bad, or indifferent, rather than reading it in and paying in a paper each week. So I think that's the way of the future, and I believe that's the way we're going to try and push as a club as well. Hopefully that's a pretty good statement to finish with for you.
Oh, yeah, you know, we love podcasts here at the Roarcast.
The Roarcast, yes. It's all right, you're allowed to mention our competition. We do get on with our competition, the Brisbane Football Review. We don't hate them.
And look, you know, as somebody that is very good friends with the local reporter, you know, we've got a long-term relationship, which, you know, really with all the local media, I do.
Yeah.
Meredith as well, you know. Everyone really seems to like me personally.
Yes. So, yes they do. You're a friend pleaser. You're a real person pleaser.
I'm a consensus builder is what I am.
I think we do miss having probably Vince. I think we might have been a bit lucky to have Vince Regari up here for AAP. You know, at least as that balance, you know, can get stories out. So I don't know, you know, you may want or not to comment on that, but at least, you know, we had
that's some other. The realities are people like yourself and others who want to look at it from a very analytical point of view, ask the questions, drill down based upon your skill and knowledge, don't have to read. That's what people want to hear because they love football. They're passionate about football. They want to know what's going on. They don't want to read smear stuff within newspapers and clickbait stuff as well. They'd rather know that little bit of extra detail about what's in the club and what's going on. If you can get that yourself and you develop that, that's where more followers are going to come from. That's a greater output for what's going on in the club for us, other than what we derive and put out in our platform. So the way of the future is through, you know, organically through you guys and others as well. And that's the way the club certainly looking at moving into the future a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic, Dave. Well,
thank you very much, Dave, and thank you very much for joining us on the Roarcast, and we'll speak to you again soon.
No worries, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for getting through that all, and very much a big thank you to David Perret. Obviously, this was something very different for us here at the Roarcast. It's not something that we've done in the past before. So we'd very much probably appreciate it if you did like this, you know, share this around. You know, we don't often ask you to go and push it to other listeners, but I think being the central thing, if you want to see more of it, get it out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, obviously, you know, as Dave was talking about there at the end there, you know, it's we'd really like for it not to be a one-time thing. We'd very much like your feedback, your suggestions, any questions you might have for, Dave or anybody else at the club for that matter.
Yeah.
If you'd like us to, push on a certain question for a certain answer, then obviously we are here for you, listeners. We want to ask more questions, like, about the $18 million offer. Definitely. But
Ben, you know all the answers to the $18 million question because you were the one that put in the bid.
That's correct, yeah.
Ben Klucksky.
I will give you $18 million and my wife.
Oh, apparently they were Turkmenistani standing or something.
That's correct. Yes. No,
all right. So, yeah, like we said, if you did enjoy it, please let us know and get in touch with any more questions. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you.